The following is a part of the Radio Memphis On Demand service. It originally aired live on Radio Memphis and has been edited for time.
Ladies and gentlemen, that person right there, an American blues singer, an electric guitarist, a songwriter, and a record producer, also a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee, one of the most influential blues musicians of all time, dubbed the King of Blues himself, B.B. King. And of course, you guys know he got his start and his career in juke joints and local radio. And of course, that is one of Memphis's sons right there. Beautiful stuff. You know, we have that opportunity around the world when we're able to kind of slip in a moment like that. It's always fantastic. And of course, we're always very, very proud, you know, of our music and our heritage and what we've got going on here. And it's funny because obviously, segue, you know, this leads me to, you know, an opportunity here that actually fell into my lap this past week right here on Radio Memphis, you know, for Radio Memphis around the world. And as it turns out, that it was part of, I see it as part of an opportunity as a special edition for the Radio Memphis Road Crew Radio Series. And you guys know that for the Road Crew Radio Series, you know, that I do with Ken Barr and Ken Barr Films, we wind up talking to some fantastic people that are behind the scenes, that help make shows happen, that help make records happen, you know, all of that good stuff. And one of the things, you know, was that, you know, to really get into the minds of the people, you know, that were behind some of the great people right there. And on this particular one right here, of course, B.B. King leading us into this, you know, had, you know, one of the most fantastic bands, okay, that always backed him in a sort. Of course, you know, that particular song, Playing With My Friends, that you guys just heard, he was hanging out with Robert Craig, so got to make a mention of that. But, you know, you guys sit there and think about the touring musicians and stuff that wrap around that whole idea. And one in specific that we know of by the name of Eugene Carrier. Well, as it turns out, his lovely wife and widow, Naomi Carrier, was laid into my lap this past week, you know, because she'd happened to be in town. She happened to be in Memphis, and she's doing some really crazy, cool, fantastic things, all wrapped around his career with B.B. King and with, you know, some historical moments. And, you know, I wound up getting to have a chat on the phone with Naomi, and the more that we chatted, the more that we realized that what she's doing and what she wound up stepping into, you know, because of her support and because of what she saw through the eyes of a wife, okay, of a touring musician, you know, led her to some pretty incredible things that she's in the middle of. And I couldn't think of a better way to share it with everybody right here in Radio Memphis, especially around the world, because her moments, you know, and you're going to find out later on, are taking her across the pond to Paris. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and bring Miss Naomi Carrier on right now. Hey, Naomi, how are you, honey?
Oh, it is such a pleasure, Diana Fryer, to be on the phone with you, to have this awesome opportunity. I have spent the last week in Memphis having a ball.
I am so thrilled. You're, in all my career on the radio, I think you're the only person that has said my full name, like, on air, like, right off the bat. I don't, I'm kind of sitting here like, I'm like in school all of a sudden. I had to sit at attention for just a second. Thank you.
I feel like I've known you for a long time.
Thank you. You know, honey, we had such a fantastic conversation, and I felt the same way too, because, you know, right off the bat, you know, and big shout out, big thank you to Mark Caldwell, Memphis Blues Society, you know, for introducing us. And, you know, because obviously, you know, what you had going on, you know, was so amazing. And he was like, you know, Dia, you know, can you, you know, you got to talk to her. And I was like, I'd be more than happy to. Magic Mark, okay, if he brings anything across the table, it's, you just say yes anyway, you know what I mean? Because, yeah, I'm never going to be let down on what he's got, you know, coming across for us. And he's such an integral part of the shows, you know, especially Radio Memphis Blues and Blues that airs on Sunday nights with Rick and Jeff. But he told me you were in town, and you and I had gotten on the phone, and, you know, we just, you know, we were like old girlfriends, and we're just sitting there talking and stuff. And
right,
it really, you know, Naomi, it really occurred to me, because of the beautiful stories and stuff that you were sharing, that you were actually giving an aspect, and you were giving a viewpoint from a very, very cool place, you know. And it was, at first, it was, you know, through the eyes of, you know, of a spouse, you know, of a touring musician, of one of the most major influential, you know, artists of music, you know. And that's a big thing, you know. I mean, you know, of course, you were talking about, you know, we were talking about your late husband, you know, Eugene. What was Eugene in the band? I mean, because he wound up, you know, getting
keyboardist.
Keyboardist. Okay.
Keyboardist. Yes. Organ, piano, electric piano.
Wow.
And for 10 years, from 1979 through 1988.
Wow. Very, very specific time. That was like, you know, that was the fire, you know, that was like the on fire time, you know, with BB.
Absolutely.
You know, and how is it, how did Eugene fall into that? How did Eugene fall into that gig?
Well, Calvin Owens, who is also from Houston, was BB King's band leader.
Okay.
And he's also a trumpet player, but he was band leader in 1979 when he invited Eugene to join the band as a keyboardist. And of course Eugene and I married in 1968. And he was an outstanding keyboardist then.
Nice.
And continued to have his own band, and so he joined the band, and we did not know when we made that collective decision that it would be 10 years. Our two sons, Langston and Robeson, were 3 and 4 years old at the time.
Wow.
And of course, when Eugene came off the road with BB, they were 13 and 14.
I mean, they kind of grew up, and it was like, oh my goodness, well, what do I do with this? Right.
Well, we had some amazing experiences, but the crux of what I'm doing right now with the Blues Endurance Exhibit came about because Eugene would always bring home posters from his travels with B.B. King.
Right.
And as we know, the boss was known to travel worldwide up to 300 days per year. Mm-hmm. And we had been collecting and holding on to and storing these posters for a number of years. Eugene passed away in 1997.
Okay.
But the posters were never in one place until about a year ago. And then in January of this year, with my collaboration with Mid-America Arts Alliance, I was invited to do a community engagement, whatever.
Okay.
You know, they said, we've got a little money, and if somebody wants to write a proposal to receive some of these funds, you need to propose a community engagement piece. And what came to my mind was, you know, I'm going to go in the closet and get these posters out. And when I did, and I counted, there are over 80 posters.
Wow. And that doesn't even really scratch the surface, you know, of the 10-year career. But, you know, what you wound up, and for those of you that are tuned in, you know, I'm talking to the lovely Miss Naomi Carrier, of course, you know, and of course, we're talking about the Blues Endurance, you know, project and stuff that she put together, you know, kind of wrapped around the B.B. King project as well through her husband. You wind up getting these, you know, this stuff, and you and I were on the phone, and when we were talking about it, another realization that kind of washed over you was that you started kind of going back in your mind, and you started realizing that these were some serious iconic moments that you were catching, you know, and now that you look at it, you're like, this is history. And some of this history that you get to present is not necessarily in a book, and it's not being told, and it's not being shared in a manner that you're sharing it.
Well, I'm glad you said that, Diana, because that brings me to my purpose. My purpose is to show the international appeal of the blues. And I have had
Perfect.
The opportunity, being here in Memphis, which comes about one, my tour here comes about 1 month following the Blues Endurance exhibit that I did in Houston.
Okay.
Numerous museums and exhibits show the origin of the blues, from the plantations of the Mississippi and Arkansas Delta and the Texas Brazos Colorado River Valley. However, none of the exhibits I have viewed show the appreciation of blues music all over the world. And I'm talking about in Japan, mm-hmm. Russia, Israel, Europe, the Netherlands, etc. The theme of Blues Endurance is how Houston and other musicians from the southern United States made appearances on world stages.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. See, that's a fantastic message. And, you know, being able to, and it's kind of funny because when you present it like that, you know, Naomi, it's like, how do you encapture that whole, you know, that whole moment, you know, and how do you encapture that whole attitude and present it so that people understand? And, you know, very, very ingenious, you know, move, you know, by taking these posters and going, let me make you understand what the impact it was here. And of course, when you start showing, it's not just showing posters, it's showing the moments that happened around those particular shows that were happening, you know, all across the world. And, you know, just to kind of bring everybody back, you know, in the middle of all of this, you know, your husband's out, you know, he's touring again, like I said, when, you know, with the King of Blues, you know, for you, you know, you and your family, for you as a wife who supported this touring musician, you know, you and I had a very candid conversation about what it took for you to be so, you know, supportive, and you did get to go to some of the shows and, you know, and all of that, but, you know, what was this career that Eugene had, what was that impact on you as a wife?
Well, as I told you, when we made the collective decision in 1979, our children were 3 and 4 years old.
Right.
And while we got an opportunity to spend Christmas in Reno and be in Las Vegas during some of the classic fights that occurred at Harrah's Casino, et cetera, et cetera, I got the chance to watch Gladys Knight backstage.
Yes, ma'am.
It had an interesting impact on our family. And the way Eugene and I kept our relationship intact, because we had been married for 10 years when he went on the road, was we wrote letters to each other. And I say to everybody who's listening now, you cannot underestimate the importance of letters.
Oh.
Over the course of of Eugene's 10 years on the road, we probably wrote about 500 letters to each other.
Oh.
And 2 or 3 times a week. And of course, Eugene was always sending money home, and sometimes he would just get an opportunity to put a note in the envelope saying, well, you know, here's what I've got this week, and God bless you and the boys, and, you know, keep yourselves up, et cetera. I did travel abroad as well as all over the United States, and one of my favorite stories comes from the time that I was at the Grand Parade of Jazz in Nice, France, and I had to stay behind. The band left the day before I was scheduled to leave. And that morning at breakfast, BB asked me, he said, well, do you have everything you need? And I said, oh, yes, I'm fine. And BB said, oh, I know you're fine. You have everything you need.
Yes. See?
That's one of my favorite stories.
See?
him. Yeah, I know you're fine. Right now,
okay.
Who happened to have shared with me the Arkansas Delta Music Trail, and they live right across the street and have inherited some of the Charlie Rich properties.
Oh,
100-acre farm. And then the brother of my host here remembers the night that BB went back in this juke joint in Twist, Arkansas to save his guitar. Lucille.
Oh my God, that's legendary.
Did you hear me?
Girl, that's legendary.
That night when this fight broke out over this woman whose name was Lucille, and somehow the place caught a fire, and of course BB evacuated like all the other people, and then he remembered his guitar. He ran back into a burning building to save his guitar.
Mm.
And then he named his guitar Lucille to remind himself to never take a chance like that again. And my host brother was there that night.
Man, that's rock and roll. And I tell you, you know, that is so good to know. You need to tell your hosts, okay? This studio that I'm talking to you out of is the original studio where Charlie Rich, this was the Silver Fox's den. This is where he would practice, and he would go. This is where he would go to when his wife didn't want him to do music at home. Okay, here in Memphis. This is where, you know, where some of the, you know, records were made. This is also Twilight Recording Studios at one point in time. A lot of records were made down here. You know, afterwards it wound up becoming, you know, Leroy Recording Studios. You know, with Brad Dunn, you know, and several other folks. And you know, it's always been a studio. But this studio that I'm sitting in for the longest time was Charlie Rich's. You know, this is what I'm sitting in.
I am living right across the street from where he was born. And let me tell you this, not only Charlie Rich comes from this immediate area in and around Forest City and Colt, Arkansas.
Okay.
I'm going to help my host to secure a historical, Arkansas historical marker for Charlie Rich. But I said, not just Charlie Rich, Al Green and Albert King come from the same area.
Sure do.
Right here where I'm lodging.
Sure do.
I said, if you're going to get the historical, I've got my organization is the Texas Center for African American Living History, and the acronym is TCALH, TCAALH. We have secured two historical markers, and that's the work that I do.
Oh, wow.
As a historian and a published author, my book, that was published by the University of Texas Press in 2010 is called Go Down Old Hannah.
Wow.
And I don't know what you know about Hubie Leadbelly Ledbetter.
Oh, yeah.
That's one of his original compositions. And Go Down Old Hannah is a prison work song.
Look at
from
you.
The Sugarland Prison in Houston, Texas, less than 20 miles from where I live.
Look at you. Well, you're just full of info. Look at you. You got all kinds of stuff. I also know, look, and those of you who are tuned in, I'm talking to the lovely Miss Naomi Carrier. You know what's cool about you too is that you also told me, you also shared with me that Miss Naomi, that you are a musician yourself.
I'm the playwright and composer of I Am Annie May, which was an oral history.
Shut up. Really?
And when I met Ruth Weingarten in 1994, she said to me one morning at breakfast, she said, I sure wish somebody would take my book and make it into a musical. And I still see myself saying, pick me. So I went home, I wrote 18 songs, and the musical has traveled all over the United States.
Yes, it has. I had no idea that was you. Oh my goodness!
That was in 1987 that we premiered I Am Annie May in Austin, Texas at one of the universities there while Eugene was on the road in 1987.
Wow!
And it traveled all over the U.S. As far north as Milwaukee, as far west as Flagstaff, Arizona, as far east as Atlanta, all over Texas, of course. And I did the 30th anniversary performances of I Am Annie May last year in 2016. And I cannot close off on that project until I have all the music scored, saying that for the benefit of these people listening. I have to score the music and get the musical in its final stage so that other people can perform it, because while it tells 140 years of Annie Mae Hunt's history, it's a very universal story about domestic women in the United States.
Very nice.
It's almost a blues story. This is a woman who went from being molested by the Ku Klux Klan to being an abused wife and a domestic worker to being an entrepreneur who made her living from selling Avon and for other people. And going to the Jimmy Carter inauguration on the Greyhound bus, one of the songs that I wrote was called Coming Up From Texas. I'm coming up from Texas, riding a Greyhound bus.
Yes.
And then one of the songs I wrote was based on Annie Mae's history was called I Don't Need No Man No More. So one night I was at this blues club somewhere with Eugene, and they asked me to sit in and say, okay, let's hear you play a song, Naomi. And the first song that came to my mind was I don't need no man no more because it's a down home blues. I've traveled east and west for a man.
Yeah.
Now that I'm set in my ways, I don't need no man nowadays. I tell you, I don't need no man no more. Why did I sing that? Eugene was just...
I was going to say, because you know Eugene.
No, I'm not talking about you. This is Annie Mae's words.
I love it, because he's still going, I know I'm on the road, but you know, baby, I send you the checks, baby.
Every week, we never had to beg Eugene for money. He sent that money on, like, clockwork. You know, one of your questions to me, Diana.
Yes.
Which is very pertinent, and I'm not sure I have seen very much commentary or documentary from musicians' wives or husbands, spouses. It was hard
to
keep our family together with Eugene being on the road. I honestly believe that one of the reasons Eugene is not with us today is because of the rigors of traveling on the road.
Wow.
And I've kind of gotten a little taste of that with my trip here to Memphis. I mean, I came into Forest City, I flew into Memphis, came into Forest City to do a presentation for the Episcopal Church.
Right.
And then I went back to Memphis, and then I was invited to take a tour down to Mississippi next week.
Right.
To be with the Just Blues Awards show. And I need to see the B.B. King Museum in Indianola, and I have a rental car, but I'm like, now I've spent already enough money in a hotel, so I'm kind of like on the road myself.
I see. You are.
Like, what it's like to play a gig until 1 o'clock in the morning and then have to get up at 6 and go to another city and to eat food that is not healthy for you, and to be exposed to a lot of alcohol and drugs and fast women and this and that.
Mm.
It is almost like being on the blues plantation.
Imagine that. You know, though, Naomi, it's funny because one of the things about you that makes it, and I will say that I think it's conservatively different than most women, is that your background as a creator and a creative yourself, you were also very quite understanding about your husband and what he was doing. You know what I mean? Where, yeah, under normal circumstances, I mean, let's be honest. And of course, I don't want to say women, because it's been reversed, where there's been some very successful women, you know, that are artists and things like that. And, you know, and the husbands are not the ones.
Loretta Lynn.
Girl, what? See, you already knew. You already knew. You know, but at the same time, you know, one of the things about having the strong relationship, you know, that you did, being able to withstand, you know, the entertainment, you know, life, you know, and business, and having a marriage and having children, you know, and instilling, you know, raising great, you know, great children and putting things forward. Do you have to agree that, you know, your involvement for yourself, you as a woman, you yourself, you know, with your art and your music and stuff, was somewhat helpful with that?
Oh, absolutely. It's interesting that you would make that observation.
Hmm.
Before Eugene went on the road, and I have to say, to Eugene's credit, he was formally educated, probably more so than any other member of that orchestra.
Good for him.
We met in college at the University of North Texas, and because we were musicians and researchers, and I have tons of books on the origin of black music,
mm-hmm,
from Africa to the origin of the blues and ragtime. I play a lot of ragtime music.
Good for you.
And jazz, et cetera, et cetera. By the time Eugene went on the road with B.B., he had internalized the entire history of black music in the United States.
Wow.
By him having read about Muddy Waters and all these people, Pine Top Perkins, Louis Jordan, Alfred King, Al Green, and then he met these people.
Yes. And shared stages with them.
And I met some of them, too. I remember Muddy Waters. Yeah, I remember Big Mama Thornton and Lightnin' Hopkins. And then there were those musicians who were from Houston, like Lightnin' Hopkins and Ornette Cobb. And, of course, the guy who brought him into the band. It was an incredible experience to not walk away from.
Well, it had to be.
Challenging.
It had to be, because, I mean, here you are, look, and I tell you, University of North Texas, I mean, they have that university has always had such an incredible music program. So I know what caliber you guys came from when you're talking about that. Yeah, I mean, we're talking about, and so shout out to them. They've always had such a fantastic program as far as when it comes to.
That's where we met Cannonball Adderley. And Eugene was in a campus band during those times. That was, I'm talking Marvin Peterson here. And if you don't know who Marvin Hannibal Peterson is, then you need to look him up right now. He's an incredible trumpet player.
Wow.
Who has now moved back to Texas. And I gotta tell you, Diana, this trip to Memphis was not only ordained so closely following the Blues Endurance exhibit in Houston.
Sure.
And my invitation to bring the exhibit to Paris, France. Is I have had an epiphany here in Memphis of how incredibly important my experience was.
Yes.
And the necessity for me to document that experience from the point of view of a spouse in a memoir.
Absolutely.
And this will be my opportunity to include so much of the memorabilia that Eugene collected, which wasn't only the posters that he brought home in his suitcase, but I have backstage passes, news articles, reviews, keynote tickets.
Absolutely. All of it. Every last bit of it.
You know, and so much of this stuff has foreign language graphics from Spain and Amsterdam and Italy and Israel and Austria, etc. And so my purpose, and I think the reason that I have been endowed with these objects is to bring them out of the closet and to share them with the world.
Absolutely, and that's the way it should be. I mean, and it's funny because, you know, Eugene, you know, wound up, you know, being able to be a part, you know, of you know, such a historical group, you know, when you're talking about backing B.B. King. Okay. Mm-hmm. And yeah. him having the musical background that he did, you know, was also very influential, you know, on, you know, some of the music and, you know, and some of the, you know, things when it came around to that. Now you mentioning, you know, going back to, you know, having met in college and of course, you know, fast forward and, you know, you are educated and you understand. And so you're reading these historical moments as far as, you know, with these blues artists and, you know, with these creators and stuff that all generate from this area, as everybody else does in the world, you know, because they, mm-hmm. you know, all roads lead back to Memphis. Okay, when it comes to music, and I really, and it really doesn't even matter what style you're talking about, but to some extent, mm-hmm. all roads do lead back here. But the impact for you, you know, and you know, and for your late husband, but for the both of you, was you know, we're talking, you know, dual sided in that, you know, here you are in the middle of, you know, one of the people who makes history as far as the music, you know, from that comes from this area, number one, too. You know, you've learned about it, you get exposed to it, you know, initially, you know, coming in and meeting these people that you've read about, you studied or whatever, and then here's Eugene sharing the stages with them, and you know, it's on tour, and you guys are out doing this. Did that impact, did you even really understand what was going on while it was happening?
Not until I came to Memphis.
See?
I am odd. I mean, you know, I have traveled everywhere. I've been abroad 13 times, but I've never been to Memphis. So when I accepted this opportunity to do a presentation for the Province 7 Anti-Racism Network of the Episcopal Church in Forest City, Arkansas, but you got to fly in and out of Memphis. I said, you know, I think I'm going to, I needed a vacation really, really very badly.
Good for you.
I said, I think I'm going to spend some extra time in Memphis. And it was not until I walked down Hill Street and I saw B.B. King Boulevard and I saw the B.B. King Club and Restaurant that I had heard about and that I went to Stax and Rock and Soul and talked to John Doyle. And it really was not until then that I realized the impact of my experience with the King of the Blues, who was such a gentleman.
But that was the King of the Blues. That was BB to you. Huh? I mean, as far as the King of the Blues, that was BB to you. That was, you know, you guys were, I mean, everybody's on a personal level, you know, your husband's part of the band. So, and I guess it wouldn't necessarily affect you in that manner because that's friends, that's family, that's, you know what I mean?
It didn't affect, that's what I'm saying.
Right.
I mean, BB King was the person my husband worked for, but I mean, I know a few other famous people. But I knew he was the King of the Blues because that's what other people say.
Sure.
But when you Google blues images, which I did many times creating the logos and stuff for the Blues Endurance exhibit, when you Google blues images, he invariably comes up. His picture comes up.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. His guitar.
99 times out of 10, 100, yes.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. He is the iconic blues image, him playing the guitar.
Absolutely.
And I don't have a copyright on that. I don't know where his family and people are in terms of documenting their relationships with him. But I don't think it's accidental that me as a historian, a composer, a playwright, have access to this particular period in time when I remember him playing That's Why I Sing the Blues.
Mm-hmm.
One of the musicals that musical plays that I wrote for my children is called Brer Rabbit Blues Bash, and then I begin to teach my students to sing the blues. Beyonce, by the way, is one of my students.
Stop it.
I taught her music and theater and history for 2 years when she was in the sixth and seventh grade at St. James Episcopal School, where I was in
girl! That is so funny, really. Really? Did you even know what that girl? Did you even know what Beyonce was?
It doesn't bother me. This is my life. But when I tell people these things, they're like, "Oh wow."
Well, I mean, you were teaching her when she was in sixth and seventh grade. Did you even know that she was going to be like Beyonce?
No, but I will tell you this: she has a natural gift. I did not teach her to sing. She is a natural born singer, and she is a very nice person.
Aww.
She was a very obedient, calm, graceful young woman.
Wow.
Who had been what she has now. From time to time, we do communicate.
Good for you.
Not to the extent I would like.
Well, I mean,
we have communicated.
She's Beyonce, man, you know?
Yeah, the Beyonce. I did teach her. In fact, we did the musical Pinocchio, and she played the starring role as Pinocchio.
Oh, wow.
I want her to do that. I wish she would do that, make a film of that for her own children, because she certainly has the capacity and the resources to do it. But I've had an incredible life.
You have. You've done a lot of... You held out on me. You totally held out on me, you know. And here I could keep digging with you. And for those of you who tuned in, talking to the lovely Miss Naomi Carrier, I could so dig, and I'll find out more stuff. I know I will, because you've just done you've done way too much, lady. You've done way too much. One of the things I have to tell you is that I am absolutely just enthralled, and I am absolutely just mesmerized about your dedication to sharing music and sharing these moments and, you know, and sharing of yourself and teaching and giving back and inspiring children and then telling stories, you know, through your husband's eyes, you know, and but it winds up being, you know, quite impactful, you know, from the legendary, you know, blues icon himself. And it's, you know, there's a lot of things, you know, Naomi, that you kind of juggle when you kind of wrap this all up. But for this, in this crazy moment, all of this makes sense to you.
Oh, yeah. I have a great sense of the history of the continuum of history.
Good for you. That's nice.
One of the things I teach, and my biggest frustration is that my work is so deserving of more sponsorship.
Right.
While I'm a grant writer, I mean, I almost single-handedly supported and financed the Blues Endurance Exhibit. I was turned down for the bigger grant, and you know, I need absolute vodka. I need FedEx. I need FedEx. I need Gibson guitars. I need the National Endowment for the Arts. And at the age of 71.
Honey, you don't even look. I thought I was talking to a 45-year-old.
Hey, you just hold that thought.
I will.
but I am really reaching out for more sponsorship because this work is deserving of sponsorship.
Sure it is. And I tell you,
I want to take my goal now is take the exhibit on an international tour.
Yes.
To the countries where the postage come from, beginning with Paris, but going to the Netherlands,
yes,
Spain, Amsterdam, Italy, Israel. I don't need to have this exhibit in the United States. And somebody said, not right now. Somebody said, well, when are you coming back to Houston? I said, I have no plans to come back to Houston. I've been to Houston. I've done that.
Right.
This is Houston's gift. World.
That's.
But now I want to be in Austria. I want to go to the UK, and I just need some company like FedEx International, like Heineken, who's in Amsterdam, where I've also been, to pick up the sponsorship.
Well, it's beautiful. I tell you.
Exhibit and tour it internationally.
Well, and, you know, the funny thing is also too is that so that everybody kind of understands what this exhibit, you know, really encompasses, you know, because it's, you know, it's the Blues Endurance Project is more than just, you know, all this memorabilia and all these stories and, you know, all this stuff, because, you know, it wound up where it became a building block, you know, for, you know, you wound up having, you know, live performances that got wrapped up into this, you know, you wound up having stuff wrapped into it for, you know, future, you know, influences as far as, you know, for children, you know, for education, you know, for Black History Month, for, you know.
It's an educational legacy. Project and because let's face it, Donna, B.B. King is no longer living.
No, he's not.
He's not coming back. You know, Eugene Carrier is not coming back. When he died in 1997, he played his last gig. It was in January of 1997. His last gig was New Year's Eve.
Wow.
Of 1996.
Yeah.
6 months after I lost my father.
Oh.
The kids and I said, you know, Pop won't be back this time. And that's difficult for me to talk about that.
Sure.
Because I do still grieve, but how do I make this music? How do I bring this music from the cotton field and from the plantation forward into the 21st century, never to be underestimated?
Right.
Because it is within the lyrics of blues music that we have the history of Africans in America.
Sure.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And in my presentation that I did in Forest City for the Episcopal Diocese was called Black Music from Creation to Liberation. While Africans in America did not get reparations for their enslavement, we were able to take our genius and repair ourselves.
Yep.
This music.
Yep.
And this music has the potential to repair so many misunderstandings in the world today, because everybody, whether you speak English or not, can pat their feet to this music. One of the young ladies that I had on my panel discussion was from Russia.
Nice.
And she told the beautiful story of how she first heard the blues in Russia, and 30 minutes, the people wouldn't clap their hands, just would pat their feet. And then she said about 30 minutes later, everybody began to rock.
There it is. Isn't there? That's the power of this music.
It overcomes cultural, you know, differences. It overcomes so many things about pain and suffering that we may not understand, but can we just rock together?
One
of my favorite songs from BB is Rock All Rock Me.
We can rock together. We definitely can rock together. That's what we need to be doing, is rocking together. Yes.
And at this particular time in our own country, where I am increasingly feeling a lot of tension, I think it's important for us to sing together, to dance together, to rock together.
Yes. Yes.
Let's just put down our rocks and rock.
That's what we need to do. That's exactly what we need to do. I love it. Now, what are your plans right now? Okay, I can't even believe who you're hanging out with. I can't believe that you're hosting stuff.
I was hanging out with some of the benefactors of Charlie Rich's history when I came here. But I'm on the road right now. I don't even know where I'm going to sleep Monday night. I got to turn in my rental car Monday.
Okay.
I got to be at the bus station at 7:30 in the morning to, hold on just a minute. Somebody's trying to get me and I got to get rid of them.
She didn't mean it like that.
I'm going to Indianola Tuesday to the B.B. King Museum, and then I'm going to come back on that bus and spend time at, what's the name of that place? Tunica, Mississippi.
Uh-oh.
Until Friday night.
Okay.
And now I got to be at the bus station Saturday morning, March the 4th at 5:45 to fly back to Houston for my only granddaughter's first birthday party.
Look at you.
So,
you are jet setting.
I'm just kind of hanging out on the road.
Look at you. You are making it happen.
It'll be okay. I just know that it's ordained, this time that I'm getting to spend in and around Memphis.
It is.
Memphis to Indianola to...
It is.
Arkansas. Because it... The whole experience, when I'm able, when it's over, to sum it up, will enrich blues endurance again.
It will. Do you have, I don't know, this kind of came over me. Do you have a voice recorder with you?
A voice recorder?
Mm-hmm.
Just on my iPhone.
Well, you could it off your iPhone. You need to sit down with your hosts while you're hanging out and have a conversation. You need to have a conversation, and you need to save that conversation. See, if you have to save it on your iPhone.
Okay, gotcha.
And whenever you get back to wherever you get back to, you know, you can have your family, you know, or you know, your students or somebody, you know, because with the iPhone, it'll be fine. Yeah. And actually pull that conversation up, because this is also part of your, you know, it's part of your journey. Okay.
You're absolutely right. And I told them last night when Dr. Robert Cole,
mm-hmm.
Dr. Robert and Mrs. Betty Cole are my hosts. he was employed by the United States Department of Agriculture under the Clinton administration.
Okay.
And he was telling me about how he acquired the Charlie Rich property, and I told him, I said, here's what I can help you do. I can help you get that Arkansas historical marker. So the recording that you are saying that I must archive to be a part of that, I said, because there's all kind of documentation on Charlie Rich.
Honey,
all we got to do is apply for the marker.
Yeah, documented.
Apply for it. It'll happen. Mm-hmm. A couple of historical markers in Texas already.
So, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's just a process. And so following your recommendation, yes, I will record the conversation.
Absolutely.
And archive it as well.
Absolutely, because you don't know where this is going to lead you to.
And then your studio, and then I will get from you the information that's pertinent on the studio.
Mm-hmm.
Where your radio interviews are occurring, and
mm-hmm.
and we'll add all of that. And I told them, I say, because these three people come from the same immediate area,
yeah,
Charlie Rich, Al Green, and Albert King.
Yes, yes.
I mean, let's maximize.
Why? There's a reason to do that, absolutely, but also too. You need to document what you just stepped into. This is...
I've been stepping off in a lot.
This is what's so funny about, you know, when you talk about, you know, who is involved with who, or who's influenced who, or who's hung out with who's played who, and just this whole tree, and it's like this, you know, we're talking about some incredible people that, you know, did some incredible things, and you know, and you realize it's like, man, they're kind of closely related. This is insane, you know, and this is you just on a journey, and it started with you reaching into your closet one day and pulling out your posters from your late husband.
It did. And having Mid-America Arts Alliance offered me a small grant for community engagement.
Let's see. Isn't that funny where this takes you? And then you wind up, you're also, being the historian that you are, Naomi, you're picking up little pieces, you know, of history that are not in books.
Yeah.
Nobody knows these stories.
Well, and I'm glad you said that, because I was just talking to a curator over in Louisiana the other day about how almost all of the books that document the blues, none of them are written by African Americans.
Well, there you go. Well, you need to, and not an African American and a woman at the same time.
Huh?
I said not an African American and a woman at the same time either.
See, that's why you and I've been put together. And Roger Wood, who's my trusted friend from Houston, who wrote the book Down in Houston, that includes Eugene Carrier and the guy who got him into the band, Calvin Owens.
Sure.
I treasure these materials. One of the documentaries I treasure is Martin Scorsese's 7-film documentary from 2003, the year that Congress proclaimed blues as a national historic treasure, was exceptionally instrumental to not only the exhibit, but my own information. We used the whole wall to show those films. The exhibit encompassed a 3,500 square foot gallery.
Wow.
At the Midtown Arts and Theater Center, where my office is located, where I'm the only African American arts organization in that building.
Wow.
I'm like seeing the necessity now for a spouse, a woman, an African American to document blues history.
All of that in one person, too. Isn't that cool?
But I still need sponsorship. You see what I'm saying?
I get you, and that's...
Take off. Somebody will just...
This is something that we'll have to kind of wrap our heads around, you know what I mean? And hopefully by us being able to have that opportunity to have these conversations and doing stuff on air, these are things that, you know, we could probably, you know, try to use, you know, as far as to your advantage. And also too, you know, I don't necessarily know that it's ever been presented in that kind of manner, just what all this encompasses, you know, with you and what you've stepped into, you know. And when you do it, and when you lay it out like that, everybody's going to go, oh, it's not just this. It's all of these things that are involved in all of these groups and all of these organizations, and education for the kids, education for Black history, education for blues history, you know, education, you know, just for documenting as, you know, some of the most iconic moments as far as in music history and how they all held hands and rocked together.
And, you know, I didn't mention this, but when June came off the road with B.B. King, he was invited to join a blues band in New Orleans.
Oh, yeah?
And so we packed up our family and moved everything, including the posters, across the Mississippi River to New Orleans. And we were there for 5 years before moving back to Houston in 1994, after one of our sons graduated from high school. It combined experience with the experience of New Orleans and Bourbon Street, and then when I came here and I saw Beale Street, and I'm like, I'm riveted back to Bourbon Street where Eugene worked for 5 years. I'm like, you know, only now this conversation you're amazing.
Thank you.
With this conversation is the necessity to crystallize what I do know about Black music into some kind of a documentary.
Yeah, that's my honey man. Look, you're giving an ammo right now.
You know what, Diana? We don't know who's listening because this is Radio Memphis around the world.
It is. You're right. You don't know who's listening. You don't know who's paying. You never know who's paying attention.
Who's listening in what country?
You don't have a clue. You have no idea. You nailed on the nose. Yes, ma'am. You are correct. And I tell you, like I told you when we were talking on the phone the other night, you know, Naomi, obviously we're live and we're having fun and stuff. And for those of you that have tuned in and, you know, stuff, if you missed the first part of this conversation, you know, you definitely don't want to, you know, not hear it. You've got to. You know, we have Radio Memphis On Demand, radio-memphis.com, where, you know, there's some things, especially some fantastic cool interviews and things that we pop back up for later. I'm going to make sure you get that copy because I want you to listen back, because we laid down the foundation for you to launch off of by pulling it all together, and it's going to make sense to you.
Yes, and I will listen to it over and over. It can become a part of our portfolio.
You know, honey, you got my number. Okay. You and I, yes. we're not gonna lose touch with each other, because I am now innately curious and excited about kind of what you've stepped into. And see, what's so funny is that when you get off the phone with me today, Naomi, and you're gonna have your conversation, you know, with your hosts and stuff, and you're gonna wind up stepping into something else, you're going somewhere else, you know, this whole trail that you're in, you know it's going to be a whirlwind, which is why from this moment, even if it's just snippets of notes, but I want you to see, you capture those conversations, you know, on those phones and stuff, so that you can, when you're like riding on the bus or you get back home and you have that downtime and you listen back for a second, you're going to go, holy smokes. I mean, and you really are going to, you know, and you're going to go, nobody knows this. Nobody's heard this. And I didn't even know until now. And, you know, and it's going to be one of those things where this is when such and such happened and this music came out. This is when this album came out, what he's talking about. And you're going to go, oh my goodness. This is, you know, you're going to realize just how beautiful and just how magical this music really is and what hands it really did help hold together. Mm-hmm. You know? I promise.
I just like to mention, for the benefit of your listeners who may want to experience the keyboard playing of Eugene Carrier.
Yes.
Featured on the Live at San Quentin B.B. King album.
Okay.
And also, he does a signature piano solo that you can pull up online in BB's tune, When It All Comes Down. When It All Comes Down.
Nice.
Is one of his signature solos that probably lasts for 3-4 minutes when he's playing with the band, so people may want to listen to that. But I am deeply grateful to you for this opportunity.
Absolutely. Are you kidding, honey? Like I said,
I've had fun.
I've had a blast. Are you kidding? Look, I'd be lying to you if I didn't say it was selfish, because, you know, B.B. King is ours. And when I talk about Memphis, and on top of it, you know, icing on the cupcake was for me to be introduced to you and stuff, because there are such amazing things that you're trying to, you know, Naomi, put together, and there's amazing things that you're, and it's all in the name of giving back, so that everybody can take that knowledge and take that education, so they can propel forward. And, you know, if somebody was trying to find out more about what it is that you're stepping into and stuff, do you have one central place that people can go to? Is there a website? Is there a place that they can contact you?
It is currently being redesigned.
Okay.
It was designed in 2008, but it served me so well for so many years until it's still good. And it's www.T is in Texas, C is in Center, AA as in African American, L as in living, H as in history.org. So that's www.tcaalh.org.
Okay, perfect. Because, and one of the things also too is that I'm going to, you know, talk to our guys and stuff and see if we can't, you know, start popping, you know, some stuff up there on our website, you know, about, you know, your sites and stuff and what you've got going on. And I just want to know that, and of course, and if you, like, do you have a personal email that you like people to reach out to you, you know, when you're, when, if they're trying to contact you directly, or can they get to you through this website?
Yes, but let me give you my email.
Okay.
It's T as in Tom, V as in Baby, A as in Apple, C as in Cake, K as in Kite, TBAC1313@gmail. TBAC13@gmail.
Okay.
Is my email address, and I welcome people to contact me there.
Okay.
I will respond.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Perfect. Well, you also know that you are in the sights and you are locked and engaged with Mark and everybody at the Memphis Blues Society as well, which is another fantastic place to start, you know, on, you know, trying to, you know, get, you know, some of these things out and some of this awareness and stuff, because you never know how, I mean, that, you know, that organization is quite magical when it makes some things happen as well. And I can speak from that, because I'm a member of the Blues Society and stuff, so I like to throw that in there as well, because
I joined the Blues Society. I met Barbara Newman, and am requesting for her a sponsorship letter to include in our portfolio, which she's considering. But my shout out goes to Mark, I also to Tony Green for introducing me to Mark.
Very nice.
Thank enough Tony Green, because she is the person who introduced me to Mark.
And very nice.
The person who introduced me to you. And
very nice.
And you're the person who's introducing me to the world via your terrific radio show. And so I plan to be in touch, and I welcome the other people to contact me, to reach out. I love hearing from people, and it's only because I love sharing what I do with other people that I have been the recipient of so much.
I am so glad. I know you've got a busy time. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to play another BB song just in your honor, and it was so funny, you mentioned it earlier, and I already had it queued up while I sing the blues. I'm like, this girl is like all tapped up into my head, you know. I had it already. Yeah, it's in queue, it's ready to go. So I'm going to play some of that. I look forward to keeping up and with you, and I look forward to, you know, to knowing some more as things come down the pike. And, you know, you and I, we'll catch up on the phone again, and we'll see where you're at on a couple of things.
Memphis, I'm definitely going to call you back. Just for you and me to talk again.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely, honey. You give me a holler. You let me know what's going on, okay? Enjoy your time. enjoy your time and go ahead. Remember, record your stuff so you'll have it for later.
Oh, I will. They'll be happy to know this. Thank you.
You are so welcome, honey. Naomi, we'll talk real soon, okay?
Yes, thank you, Diana.
All righty. Thanks again for calling.
Diana Fryer.
You kill me. We'll talk later, honey. Alrighty.
Diana Fryer.
Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, the lovely Miss Naomi Carrier. And, of course, you know, wife, you know, of widow of late Eugene Carrier, who was part of the amazing band, touring band of none other than the blues legend himself, B.B. King. And, you know, it started out as a special edition of the Radio Memphis Road Crew Radio Series, where we get to kind of go behind the scenes. And we actually looked at, you know, we looked at an opportunity through the eyes, you know, of a spouse, you know, of a touring musician. But that spouse was this amazing lady. And you heard here first, you know, just how amazing it was, you know, being educated and actually being a historian, being an artist, you know, being a musician herself, being a playwright and everything else, which totally makes sense to me on why, you know, somebody like, you know, Naomi Carrier is so understanding about how this business is and how it runs. But what's beautiful is that she's taken this opportunity, you know, through the eyes of her husband and through the experiences, you know, of touring as far as with B.B. King and some of the most historical shows and everything else, it started with posters out of a closet and has turned into, you know, a message, you know, to the planet about how everybody can hold hands together and rock. This is going to be some good stuff. You want to keep up with what's going on. You want to keep up with a Naomi Carrier. So make sure, first and foremost, that you actually at least plug in, you know, this website, TCAALH.org, okay? TCAALH.org, all right? And, of course, you know, we're talking about as far as the blues and the blues exhibit, the blues endurance exhibits and stuff that she's putting together. And with these exhibits and stuff, it's not just memorabilia, and it's not just, you know, presenting, you know, these actually iconic moments that happen. Along with it, you know, she's been able to wrap around, you know, education, you know, children's education, you know, performances, live performances and things like that, you know, while certain events are going on, along with, you know, education about Black History Month, education about blues, the music, you know, as far as where it's come through, where it's coming from and where it should propel forward to. Very, very important stuff. And so I can't thank enough, you know, again, you know, to Mark Caldwell and the Memphis Blues Society for introducing her, you know, into us here at Radio Memphis. And I'm so glad that we got to share this moment with you guys, because I did hear that she is already, you know, she's already kind of up on the bar for, you know, actually, you know, appearing in Paris, you know, with all of this information, along with some of the programs and stuff that she's trying to ultimately pull together. So those of you that are across the pond, pay attention, you know. So a little bit of Memphis is going to be coming to you in the form of a young lady by the name of Naomi Carrier. In the meantime, speaking a little Memphis, before we have to stop down and take a quick break, I got to give you some Memphis back. You know what? Because this right here is ultimately why all music really exists. And it's because of the music we come out of here, right? How about a little bit of why I sing the blues? Well, B.B. King's going to tell you that right here only on Radio Memphis.
The proceeding was produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated and originally aired live on Radio Memphis. Any offers or advertisement contained may not still be valid. All rights are reserved and copyright is held by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. For more, look for all the RMOD players at radio-memphis.com.